Good morning and welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the studios of WMOT-FM. We talk about study abroad a great deal on this program because internationalism is one of the goals at MTSU, not only to welcome international students to our campus, but to give our students an opportunity to travel to other countries and experience their culture, their education, their lifestyles, and their languages. And with us today is Justin Witt, who's 23 years old. He's from Anderson, South Carolina, and he's a double major in recording industry and international relations. He's going to embark on a trip to Malaga, Spain, where he's hoping to be for about 2 years. Is that right?
That's correct.
And working in conjunction with a middle school over there in a reciprocal arrangement that benefits both teams, as they say in baseball. Thanks for being with us today, Justin.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, how did you obtain the money to enable you to afford this experience?
Well, I actually worked all summer. I worked at the Boys and Girls Club, just saving up a bit of money. They do pay you, depending on which region you live in. It's in the bigger cities, they'll pay you a little bit more. I'm getting about 700 euros a month, which is livable, definitely, in the city I'm going to. But the thing is, they delay in paying you a little bit, maybe a month or two. So you do need a little stockpile of money to survive maybe one or two months.
Okay, and then this is just your room, board, transportation,
right.
The essentials.
Right.
Any extracurricular activities are basically on your own dime, right?
Right.
Okay. And where did the money come from?
You're talking about how they're paying me?
No, I mean the organization.
Oh, well, it's actually a federal grant that's given to the schools, and then they pay you. The way they do it, since it comes as a federal grant, you're allowed to get a student visa, so it doesn't actually count as working. So you're able to stay as a student and still get paid without. It's kind of a loophole in the visa system.
And this is from the government of Spain when you say federal. You're talking about,
right.
Not the United States government.
Correct.
Okay. And how did you apply for this stipend?
There's a few basic requirements. They would like you to have a bachelor's degree from the U.S. They want you to be a citizen of the U.S., have some basic Spanish knowledge and a recommendation from a professor. And once you send all that in, they approve you. And it's a pretty quick process. And once you're approved, you start the visa work and you're on your way.
Did you have to get any recommendations from your professors here or anything?
I did.
Like that?
I got one recommendation from a Spanish professor here.
Okay. Is Spanish a minor for you? Or if not, why the interest in Spain in particular?
Spanish was my minor. I did study abroad in Spain, actually, too, for about 6 months in Pamplona. So I am very interested in going back and experiencing sort of the other side of the culture, which is in the south, because I was in the north before, and they're very different. So.
And when were you in Pamplona?
That was in 2008.
Okay, and what sorts of studying did you do there? What courses were you involved in?
I took mainly political science and economics classes. In retrospect, I probably should have taken maybe a few more easier classes because it was fairly difficult.
Did you experience the running of the bulls?
I did, actually. I lived on the street where the bulls run, so I was able to watch the entire thing and be there for the whole week-long festival.
But you did not run?
Oh, no. I had the intention of running when I got there, but I talked to a lot of locals, and they said, no, it's just for crazy tourists.
Did you see anyone get gored?
No, but apparently one person died that year. Luckily, I wasn't around to see it, but...
What did the locals tell you about this custom? Why people participate in it, and why the fascination with it?
It started off just as a kind of a way they would move the bulls from one pen to another, and you know, people would just run in front to kind of have fun, and it grew into this really big thing over the years. And as of recently, the past few decades, it's become just a huge week-long festival with tons of drinking and debauchery and a lot of fun.
sort of like Rio with pain.
Yeah. You could say that.
Now, you're hoping to find out what the differences are between the north and the south, like comparing Pamplona to Malaga.
Right.
What have you heard about the differences in the regions in Spain?
Well, I wasn't aware before I went, but Pamplona, at least in the north of Spain, is very different from the south in that the south contains more of what Spain represents. When you think Spain, bullfighting, the whitewashed houses, and like the hot temperature and flamenco and all this, generally from the south. The north is has a lot of different influences from the Catalan culture, the Basque culture, the Galician culture. So it's a mishmash up north, and the south is more pure.
Is there one part of the country that is more industrialized or westernized, shall we say, than any other?
I mean, I guess that the larger cities, Madrid and Barcelona, would have to be more westernized in a way. There's a lot of tourism, even in the south, a lot of expats, pretty much anywhere you go in the larger cities. But you can still definitely see through the architecture and all of the Moorish influence that is still very Spain. It's, you know what I mean?
Yeah. When you were in Pamplona, did you get a sense from the locals of what they think of the way Hemingway has romanticized Spain in his novels? I mean, that's something that is very much associated with him because he had a fascination with the Spanish Civil War.
Mm-hmm. In a way, I would say, at least with the Running of the Bulls Festival, it's kind of gotten away from a lot of the traditional parts of it. It's more now of just a large drinking festival for foreigners. And actually, a lot of the locals go out of town for that week. They don't even like to be around. It's so crazy.
Yeah. I understand you're going to have like a 12 to 16 hour weekly schedule. Do you know what you're actually going to be doing on a day-to-day basis yet?
I've looked up a little bit. I'll mainly be assisting English teachers, basically just being there to, I guess, correct any mistakes they might make, or just being someone that speaks it natively so the kids can get a sense of what it sounds like. And I'll be doing a lot of fun activities, I imagine, but nothing too strenuous or demanding, I think.
Are these language-based activities or more like recreational activities?
I think they'll be more language-based. I've yet to be informed of a lot of my duties so far, but I'm just trying to go with the flow, and I think it'll be all right.
How would you describe your facility with Spanish? Beginner, intermediate, advanced? Do you feel comfortable with just conversational Spanish, or do you feel comfortable with the grammatically correct, properly written, properly spoken Spanish?
Well, I was lucky enough to have Spanish studied Spanish since around the fifth grade, and I've had a lot of contact with Spanish speakers here at the university through associating with a lot of the international students. And since I minored in it, that helped. And studying abroad was a huge help, just being surrounded by it for 6 months. So I'd say a little bit above conversational. I can hold my own, although it has been a year since I've been able to speak it on a consistent basis. So,
yeah. In associating with the international students, have you been able to pick up on some of the linguistic differences between Spanish as it is spoken in Spain and Spanish as it is spoken in Mexico and some of the Central American countries?
Oh, absolutely. It's a very different animal. At first, I almost wished I had gone to South America because that's what they teach here, is more South American type of Spanish. There's certain grammatical concepts that the kind of gloss over that they actually use in Spain that they don't really teach here, but I've actually grown to kind of like it, and I want to improve upon it. And
what is there about the culture of Spain that you particularly like?
For me, I would say the laid-back sense of time, the whole siesta thing, which I didn't like at first because in the hours when you want to get your stuff done around from 2 to 5, everything closes, and at first it's very annoying, but after a few months there, you kind of get used to it, and you just get used to that way of life and eating slow and taking naps and that kind of thing, and you grow to kind of like it.
Was it difficult for you to get used to that that sort of lifestyle? I mean, there are a lot of us who'd like to be able to take an afternoon nap, especially after lunch, but everything in this country is go-go, rush-rush, produce.
That's true. I could definitely tell that when I got back. For the first few weeks, I guess they call it kind of a reverse culture shock. I mean, it wasn't that bad for me, but I could definitely feel the pressure of being back and being pressured to work and be up all the time and study. Whereas back there, I don't know, you just take life more easily. You don't take things so seriously. Everything's not a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
You just let it happen, basically.
Does that lifestyle, that ambiance, also affect the educational system? I mean, does it apply to students as much as it does to the working class?
You might could say that. A lot of the students that I met seemed very serious about what they were studying and very focused, but at the same time, they weren't always talking about, you know, how hard their exams were and all the homework they had to do. They weren't stressed about it, but they were very concentrated in what they were doing at the same time. So it was a good balance.
Are the Spaniards with whom you associated when you were in Pamplona and whom you got to know, were they party animals or mostly stick to business?
Well, there's a good mix there. The thing about most Spaniards is they like to party a lot and very late. They eat late, so they'll start partying maybe, you know, around 2 a.m. That's when all the clubs start filling up. There was a good mix, though. I got in contact with a lot of people that were more like me, that partied more in the U.S. kind of style, and maybe got started, you know, a little bit earlier, maybe ate a little bit earlier. I also made friends with a lot of the Basque people up there, which were very different from the typical European kind of Spaniards, in that they were more socially friendly at first, mm-hmm. rather than, I got the feel that most Europeans were socially cold a little bit mm-hmm. upon first meeting them. It took a little bit to warm up with them. But overall, I made a lot of good friends, a lot of good traveling buddies. It's a good experience.
And a lot of people who've studied abroad have told me that despite Europeans' distaste for the direction that American foreign policy has gone in recent years, they are able to distinguish between the American people and the American government. Did you find that to be the case as opposed to getting a Yankee-go-home kind of indifference or attitude?
I would say so. I experienced both sides of that, in that a lot of people kind of judge you immediately, oh, you're an American, you know, that kind of concept that Americans, you know, think they're the best and think they can do whatever they want.
Ugly American.
Right, exactly. But most of the people, I'd say the vast majority, were very understanding. They knew that, you know, it's all the same. I'm a good person. I'm another person, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, you talk about different regions, different types of people within Spain, Basque and Catalan. Can you explain some of the differences?
It's hard to explain Basque because linguistically, no one really knows where their language comes from to this day. They're really amiable people. I really enjoyed getting to learn a little bit about them and about their language. Catalan, or in the Catalan region, they're actually fighting for autonomy. They want to be a separate kind of state outside of Spain, so there's more, I don't want to say they're aggressive, but they're definitely, they're more lively about what they believe in. The Galician people, I didn't get to meet very many of. From what I understand, their language is basically Portuguese, basically the exact same. But they were all very nice. I didn't experience any hatred between groups of cultures or anything, maybe some slight animosity at times, but nothing outright like angry or anything.
Yeah. When you were in Pamplona, what age group of students were you associating with for the most part?
Most of them were around my age. Some were younger. I did happen to meet a few people through language exchanges. We would speak Spanish and then English just to improve to be like a mutually beneficial kind of conversation we would do once a week. And some of them were older, actually, but generally around college age.
Mm-hmm. Now, in Malaga, you're going to be interacting, you said, with middle-aged students. Mm-hmm. Are you supposed to be an instructor or an authority figure, or are you supposed to be more of a big brother and have that kind of relationship?
I get the feeling that since I'll be actually assisting a teacher. I won't be teaching myself, so I imagine that I won't be really punishing the kids too much or being the authority figure. I'll just be there to kind of help out. At least I think so.
So you'll actually be more of a faculty assistant, and you'll be interacting with the faculty at least as much as with the students.
Right, right. That's what I've heard.
What is there about the Spanish language? It's a Romance language. It's one of the four Romance languages based on Latin. What is it about the Spanish language in particular that you like? I mean, you've been studying it since fifth grade.
Right. At least here in the U.S., you're exposed to it a lot more than, say, French or Italian or Romanian or anything like that. Upon when I came upon the decision to decide between which one I wanted to study, I figured out that Spanish was generally easier, and generally easier to understand, and that French is so smooth, all the words kind of blend together for me, it's hard to understand, and Spanish is very staccato and easier to pick up on, so that kind of led me towards that. Plus, my experience with a lot of Hispanic people here led me to want to be able to interact with them in different ways and communicate. So,
do Hispanic people who live here that you've interacted with, do they understand you when you speak Spanish, or do you run into that thing again of, well, I'm from El Salvador, or I'm from Guatemala or something, and there loses a little something in the translation?
Oh, no. At times, I mean, if you're speaking a lot of slang, but generally the Spanish is Spanish, what they say, you know. I mean, even if you're from some deep region of Spain and you meet someone from South America, you're going to be able to understand each other fine as long as you're not speaking to each other like you would to someone from your own region with a lot of local slang and stuff. It's not that difficult.
Did it take you a while to get used to the fact when you were a kid that in Spanish words have gender, masculine, feminine, or neuter, which is different from English?
That is a little tough to pick up on after a while. I try not to think about it. I try just to, when I see the word the first time, just keep it in my head that way. It still is something you mix up every now and then. It's probably something you never really get over unless you learn it at a very young age. That and the whole concept of conjugations and all of that. There's a lot of difficulties, but I found it's easier to get along with a language if you kind of turn your brain off sometimes and just let it flow out of you.
Dr. Shelley Thomas on this campus, who is involved with, she's involved with a periodic institute in which people learn languages through storytelling. Is that a good method, do you think, of actually being forced to speak it, even if it comes out with the noun and verb not agreeing, or not exactly grammatically correct, or not making sense your first time, like I colored my chicken green, or something like that, as opposed to the actual books and workbooks and conjugating verbs and such?
Absolutely. I think that the biggest obstacle to people trying to learn is that they're so afraid of making mistakes that they just end up not talking at all. And you cannot learn that way. You have to be ready to look like an idiot for a few months when you start speaking it. So I think that making mistakes is all part of the process. And as long as you're around the right group of people, I mean, they're not going to care. They're not going to make fun of you. So you really shouldn't worry about it, you know.
Well, you don't want to make a mistake and like insult somebody and say a word. You think you're asking for directions to the bathroom, and then actually you're calling them a blankety blank. you know, you don't want to make anybody mad because you screwed up, you know.
Right. That might be kind of hard to do. But even if you did, I'm sure they would understand, depending on where your level is. If you were to make that big of a mistake, I think they would understand the problem and probably be okay with it.
Was the Pamplona trip your first experience abroad, or are you an experienced world traveler?
I wouldn't call myself experienced. I had traveled outside the U.S. once before. I went to Colombia for about a month. I went with a Colombian family, and I was shown around. That was my first experience, and it was more of a culture shock than going to Spain, actually. Colombia is industrialized. It's more westernized than a lot of Latin American countries, but it's still a little bit behind in terms of there was a lot of construction going on in the city. Some of the roads were very rough. You couldn't even drive over them. I didn't really experience any hostility in terms of, you know, the whole guerrilla warfare thing. I think that's kind of over with. But I would say that in Spain, I felt like there was more. I don't know where I'm going with that.
You were talking about roads and stuff. So you're saying that the infrastructure of the country of Colombia is still kind of underdeveloped when you're talking about roads and bridges and that kind of thing.
Some of them were. I mean, I don't want to give the impression that Colombia is just this destroyed, dilapidated country, but so they were going, they're growing, so there's a lot of construction going on, and they're tearing up a lot of neighborhoods and roads and stuff, and so in some parts it does seem like that. But I would say in Spain there's you still have a lot of the old buildings intact and the cobblestone streets there and all that, so it feels a little bit nicer. But
so they're conscientious about historic preservation in Spain? Yeah.
In Europe in general, I believe. A lot. I experienced that in France also. In a lot of the old apartment buildings, like the ceilings, you're not allowed to change them or hang anything off of them or paint them or anything, because the people can see them from the streets, so they want them to still have that kind of old look to them.
And now, when did you go to Colombia and when did you go to France?
Colombia, that must have been 07, and I've been to France 3 times. I'm actually dating a girl that's studying there in Paris right now.
Is she French or American?
She's actually Tahitian.
She's Tahitian.
Okay. Just studies in Paris, yeah.
Now, were these all study abroad opportunities, or were some of them just pleasure trips? Or?
No, I mean, when I went to Colombia, I was actually dating a Colombian girl at the time, and I went with her family. The trips to France, I took a few trips while in Spain, while studying abroad in Spain. Mm-hmm. I had the opportunity to go over there, so I took it.
At any time in any of your travels, did you feel in any way unsafe? I know that some parents post 9/11 have been reluctant to let their kids go to a different country unless it was Canada because of fears of unrest in certain parts of the world.
As far as Spain goes, when I took my Euro trip, we went through a few countries. A friend came from here and traveled with me. I felt safe pretty much the entire time, except I was robbed in Barcelona.
Ooh.
Of my passport and my phone and my money and everything, basically, a week or two before I was about to leave to come back here.
Were you held up at gunpoint?
No, they actually tricked me. One guy spoke to me while the other one grabbed my stuff behind my back, which is actually pretty common there. You really need to hold on to your stuff when you're running a lot of bus stations and places like that.
Did you just snatch it and run, or was it more like pickpocketing?
My bag was actually at my feet, and they had my head turned.
Oh.
And as soon as my head turned back around, they were both gone with my stuff.
Oh, man. How long did it take you to get a passport replacement and did you have to get traveler's checks replaced or anything like that?
Luckily, the embassy was very cooperative. Apparently, this happens all the time. Mm-hmm. Actually, there was a couple in front of me in line at the embassy who had lost their bag at the exact same bus station in the exact same way, mm-hmm. probably about the day before me. So
wouldn't be surprised it was by the same guys.
Probably, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised. But, I mean, I got a temporary passport fairly quickly, and I was out of the country within a few weeks, so everything worked out.
Are relations between the United States and Spain pretty good, so far as you could tell from your visit?
Oh yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say there's any problem right now. It's, as far as internally, the Spanish economy is probably way worse off than we are at this point. They're saying it could be the next Greece, but who knows at this point?
What is the currency equivalency right now? They're using euros, so the euro to the dollar is about what right now?
I haven't checked in a while. The euro hasn't been doing so hot lately. I'm going to guess around 1.3 something dollars to the euro.
Okay, so you're going to come out a little bit on the short end.
Correct.
Okay.
Although if I'm able to save a little bit over there, I can, you know, have an advantage when I come back.
Is it better for someone who's traveling to a foreign country to do the currency exchange before you go or after you get there?
They say to, you know, go to a bank here, get a few hundred, well, in my case, a few hundred euros just to have in cash when I go over there. And I think, I mean, what I did, I just used my card basically the whole time I was over there, unless I wanted to withdraw money, in which case there was a large fee for doing so, so I tried not to do it too often.
Mm-hmm.
But in most places, yeah, you can use your card. There are still a few places where they might be a little bit behind or they don't have card readers, so you do need cash. But
you're talking about credit card or ATM card?
Like an ATM card. Mm-hmm. I didn't use my credit card. But yeah, I would not recommend taking a lot of cash in the local currency, just enough to get you by for a few days.
did you use traveler's checks at all?
I did not.
Okay. So you were there for a long enough period of time that traveler's checks would have been, you know, like a waste. That would be more like for a 1 week or 2 week vacation.
Right. Yeah, I didn't bother with it.
Okay. Talk a little bit about mass transportation and how it's different in Europe than it is over here. Here, it seems like it's pretty much non-existent by comparison to the bullet trains and such.
The cool thing was actually the cheap transportation within Europe. I was able to fly on my Euro trip from certain countries for less than $30. I think it was from Italy to Spain for like $20 or less or something like that. So through certain discount airlines, you can do that. And a lot of the trains are slightly more expensive, but quick and comfortable. There's buses everywhere. There's metros everywhere.
Subways,
yeah. I definitely, that was one of the cooler parts about living in a city there, because I've never lived in a city here, just been in Nashville, but...
Which doesn't have a subway.
Of course. But even just experiencing Nashville here and having to find parking all the time is, you know, such a headache, but, you know, you don't have to worry about it in most cities in Europe, so...
Italian drivers have a reputation for being off the charts with their wackiness. How are Spanish drivers?
I didn't notice anything too crazy. I got to ride in a car a few times with some of my friends, but they seem pretty stable to me. Nothing crazy.
That's good to hear. Where would you like to go after this experience? Do you want to? This will be your second trip to Spain. You've been to Colombia. You've been to France. Where else would you like to go?
I've been pretty much all over Western Europe. I think I would love to go to Southeast Asia, probably Thailand. I have a few friends in Thailand. I would love to visit, and they've talk about it all the time, how beautiful it is. So I'm kind of jealous, and I'd like to go visit them.
Did your parents always encourage this sort of an interest in internationalism, in what was going on outside the United States?
No, not at all, actually. Neither of my parents have been outside of the States. Not much of my family has. It was an interest that didn't really start until I moved into the dorms here and began associating with some international people and kind of got into that group. It sparked my interest.
Are you a member of any of the student organizations that have to do with internationalism?
I'm not really a member. I do help out with the study abroad office a lot. Just getting a lot of the new students here oriented, and we take them on trips and stuff. That's actually not even through the school. There's a few people here that live really close to campus that every semester they'll gather up all the international students and take them hiking and climbing and all the kinds of fun stuff, and they do it all semester long.
That's a wonderful thing, because it's easy to come over to a strange country and a strange university and just feel sort of dumped and lost and unconnected.
Absolutely, yeah. I felt that way a little bit in Spain when you got there. I mean, because I've been doing this so long for so many years here, trying to help out a lot of the exchange students, that I almost half expected someone to be there to do that when I arrived in Spain, but of course there wasn't. So you're just going to have to make your own friends and go with flow.
Okay. So you're familiar with the entire study abroad drill, getting checked out, getting your shots, all of the bureaucratic rigmarole. Do you pack light or do you pack as though you're going to stay a long time, which you are, but do you pack light and then buy things after you get there?
I definitely pack as light as possible, just because of all the little traveling you'll be doing upon arriving, you know, getting into the taxi. And in my case this time, I'll have to find an apartment, so I'm probably going to have to live on a few couches for a while and be all around the city. So I would love to go in just a backpack, but I don't think that's possible. So just a backpack and one suitcase will be fine.
Did you ever stay in any youth hostels in any of your other travels?
Oh, yeah. When I took my Euro trip, we stayed in a lot of hostels. Luckily, though, I knew enough people from associating with the international students here that I was able to stay on a lot of couches in Europe. Mm-hmm. I would definitely recommend doing that if you want to save some money.
Okay. So if you're an experienced veteran and you have friends and you have connections from your other trip, it'll definitely be easier the next 20 or 30 times around.
Absolutely. Okay.
Justin Witt has been our guest today. He's going to Malaga, Spain as a study abroad student. If you'd like to know more about MT Abroad, contact Rhonda Waller at rwaller, that's R-W-A-L-L-E-R, at mtsu.edu. She is the director of that office. Thanks for being with us today, Justin.
Thanks for having me.
This is MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue. Please join us again at the same time next Sunday. Don't forget, you can check out the podcast at your leisure at mtsunews.com, and we're available on iTunes.